When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast, quick text message, 5-Hour Energy fan line. 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans. Sean, you not remembering games towards the end of the season doesn't have anything to do with the Texans' record in 2022. It has to do with you getting old. Sorry. No, I've got pretty good memory on other stuff. I think I legitimately am suppressing December and January of the Culley and Lovie Smith years. Those were not fun years to be following Texans football, but we knew better days would be ahead, and they are, and they're here. They're a whole lot better.
You might have been self-medicating a certain amount, too, to get through the doldrums.
Sure.
So that, yeah, some of those memories might just never, ever seeped into your gray matter.
Yeah.
Because it was just competing with too many alcohol molecules.
That's right. Yeah. It is what it is, man. You get through the season any way that you can, all right? Mm-hmm. Deion Sanders met with the media yesterday, and this popped up on my time. I thought this was really, really good from Deion, and I think it gives you a real window into kind of how he's approaching things and why it's working in Colorado. Separately, I do wonder how much longer he's going to be at Colorado executing this strategy once Shador is gone. So I think that's fair. But I thought this was a really astute way to look at things. First, he lays out the reality of high school recruiting in the NIL era.
Just say we get 25 high school players. How many is going to play that freshman year at the most?
Four.
Let's say four or five, right? And so now you got 20 guys redshirted. So when you go through that spring with that 20 guys redshirted, how many are you going to retain after that spring? Or how many are going to jump in the portal on you? Let's just do it. If any one of you want to go statistically and try to calculate this, I already done it. So it's going to be how many?
Half.
Okay, why don't I just focus on 10? Guys that can – see, when we grab a freshman, we expect that guy to play. We're not looking at, hey, man, we can just redshirt you, develop you. No. We're looking for you to come in and play some football. I don't give a darn if it's a walk-on, if it's a Cash Cleveland. We expect you to play.
Yeah, and so like Deion's basically saying, screw these 25-man high school classes. I'm just going to go get 10 guys that contribute. I'll never win the Rivals.com recruiting wars, ever.
Well, and you also look at, you're not trying to amass as many as possible.
5 stars and 4 stars.
You're kind
stars
of like looking at it more strategically as where are opportunities to play right now. Why are we going to bother with a 5-star if the kid's going to have to sit behind a stud we already have?
Yep.
And he's going to bolt after year one or year two for playing time somewhere else.
Yes.
You start to just find, all right, who are the biggest freakishly physically developed 18-year-olds out there and who can play right now? Because who knows even if we have them for another 3 or 4 years.
Yeah,
it is what it is.
Give me 10 of those guys instead of 25 of these other guys, you know?
Yeah. I do think it speaks to the guys who are able to stick and move in a rapidly shifting landscape. You know, Deion said the same thing in the offseason when they lost so many guys in the transfer portal. You know, he said, all right, well, who are we losing? You know, they weren't guys that were making a huge contribution or anything. So you got to stop using the old metrics of how many 5-stars do you still have in your roster versus how many guys are going to show up and play this year. I think that's even though the individual strategy would be different in the NFL or, you know, if he was at a different school or what have you, I think the adaptability in a changing landscape probably speaks to something that Deion has that maybe a lot of other coaches don't have,
yeah.
whether they be college or NFL coaches, that, man, things have shifted and changed in the way things operate a lot, and you got to have guys who can move and adapt to those changes.
Yeah, here's more from Deion. He actually compares it to the – he compares winning recruiting to the, air quotes, winning the NFL draft.
Our approach is somewhat different, heavily scrutinized, heavily criticized, but we know what we're doing. So if anybody ever did the homework and the statistics of these young men that people have a class that they say is the number one class in the nation, then five of those guys play or four of those guys play, then the rest go through the spring, then they jump in the portal. Give me those numbers. Don't give me the numbers of where you rank nationally in recruiting, because this is like an NFL team. You always say, who won the draft? Then the team gets killed all year. You don't say nothing else about it. Who won the draft last year in the NFL? Nobody care right now, right? Exactly. You see what I'm saying?
I do. I do see what you're saying. I think it's interesting because I think there are plenty of college coaches who are still comfortable with the old model, like executing it that way and saying, hey, we'll bring in 25 guys. And you know what? If 10 of them leave and go transfer, then 10 of them leave and go transfer. And that's just the cost of doing business, you know?
I think the number one winner last year, who had the highest, who was like the more unanimously highest graded draft?
The Ravens
got a lot of...
get a lot of love, man.
Yeah, the Ravens, and they consistently do it now. It's almost a point where, like, yeah, even the guys we don't know about. Oh, probably the Bears, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was the Bears. The Bears, yeah. I think the Bears won the draft.
Yeah.
Caleb Williams, Rome Odunze.
Yeah.
Like, those were the big ones. You got Caleb Williams, you got Rome Odunze at the very top of the draft. Kind of like the Texans the year before. Whenever you have two top 10 players, people are going to overwhelmingly say, wow, look at the guys that you got. You won the draft.
Yeah.
So for the Texans, I would say it worked out. You ended up having the two offensive, you had the offensive and the defensive rookie of the year.
Literally could not have worked out any better.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
the Lions, I would say, got good grades too.
They did.
Without high draft picks.
You're talking about the same draft, this past draft or this?
Yeah, this past draft.
Yeah. They got real good grades 2 years ago when they got Brian Branch and Laporta in the second round, and they got Jahmyr Gibbs, I think, was a rookie that year. Like, they had real good grades.
The best draft grade, or at least tied for the best draft grade on PFF, was the Indianapolis Colts because of Leatu Leitu and Adonai Mitchell largely.
Yeah. They got the best defensive player in the draft.
Yeah.
Everybody else is stupid except me.
So none of those teams so far have really, it hasn't translated into brilliant performances out of rookies or what have you.
No. So, yeah, I like the comp to the NFL draft. Deion laying that out the way he did, I mean, really gives you a window into how he views this whole thing. Like, it's very businesslike. Yeah. I'm trying to think, like, if I had a son who was a football player, would I rather send them to go play for Deion, where, you know, if you're going there, you're probably going to play early, but Deion is, you know, like, Deion's pretty cutthroat, you know, like, if it ain't working, then you're off the good list. Or would you send your kid to, like, a more traditional college coach who's, you know, like, that's building big classes, and you're probably there for the long haul?
Well, and you hear about the way Saban talks about it. Look, Saban was in a position where he had the pick of the litter in terms of guys that he would want to recruit, and he said one thing that was off-putting for him was that parents weren't even asking the questions anymore about the academic environment or the, like, how much tutelage and what was the coaching going to be like. It was, how much
money,
when, where,
yeah,
how much of it's guaranteed, all that stuff. That I think that, if that's the pool of the five-star recruits, largely, that's the world you live in, you're not going to waste a whole lot of time unless you're a place like Notre Dame or Stanford or Boston College or what have you, where you got the academic thing to sell.
Mm-hmm.
It's, for a lot of the top-tier recruits, it's how much? How much can you pay
it's
me?
Minor league football.
And Deion's looking at it like, yeah, okay, well, and how much is it worth? Are we going to, I'm not going to spring it. This guy's not going to play right away. We're going to throw a bunch of money at him.
Yep.
And then there's a really good chance that he's going to jump anyway after 1 year. We're not going to waste our time with guys like that.
Yeah. Hey, as long as we're talking about Deion, and we mentioned the Bears a moment ago, how much do you think Caleb Williams' ordeal that he's going through is affecting Deion's view of Shador going into the draft. Like this, Dan Orlovsky tweeted this the day that they fired Shane Waldron in Chicago. He said, today is an example of why Deion will make sure Shador goes to the right place.
Well, and Deion, I can't remember which podcast he was on. He answered a question about this last week where he said that, yeah, he will be involved if he doesn't like where Shador is drafted, but it won't be public. It'll be behind the scenes.
Travis Hunter too. He's basically
Travis Hunter as well.
Travis Hunter too. Yeah. He's basically treating Travis Hunter like he is a Sanders brother right now.
Yeah, yeah. Which is that's kind of how it's been. He's been with him since high school.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that does Caleb Williams factor into that? Not as any more than a rubber stamp on what Deion already felt after having been in the NFL for four decades now. Or at least, you know, it's been four decades since he was first in the NFL. He's seen it. He knows what happens to quarterbacks that go to bad organizations.
Yeah. And that's where I wonder with Deion, like, what's the threshold? Like, okay, for Deion, is it more about there's these five or six organizations that I just don't want Shador to go to?
Yeah.
Or is it at the other end where there's five or six and he's only going to these? Because
he really wants to go. Oh, that's a good question.
You know what I mean? And because the fact of the matter is, I understand the bad organization part of it because a lot of bad organizations tend to stay bad. Now, some don't. The Texans were viewed as a bad organization from 2020 through 2022. But C.J. Stroud had no problem coming here, and now I think the Texans are a good organization again. You know,
the Lions were considered the worst organization
now
for a long time,
and they're the gold standard. So that's where the whole thing to me, even at 30,000 feet, forget about okay, these five teams are bad and these are good or whatever. Like at the NFL is so opposite of stagnant when it comes to that. You know, like for the most part. Is that it changes. It's so fluid and changes. And so there's a really good chance. I guess what I'm saying is there's a really good chance that Deion, if he tries to manipulate Shador onto a team, there's a 50-50 chance that that team in 2 years is operating like one of the teams that Deion wouldn't have wanted him on in the first place.
Well, I think that's where it probably comes down to who's the GM and who's the head coach. I mean, it's like I say it all the time. And it's overly simplified, and it's really, really hard to do. But like all you have to do in any organization is find the right GM, the right head coach, and the right quarterback, which is it's incredibly hard to do. But like so many bad organizations, once they luckily randomly stumble upon the right GM and head coach combination, there's only so many organizations that are going to actively screw that up.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the Jets are that organization. I don't know. So I think it's impossible to know which teams would be a red flag right now without knowing who the GM and the head coach is.
Yeah.
I think right now, like the Jaguars, I don't think the Jaguars are a bad organization. I think they've been saddled with Trent Baalke, a GM who has the owner's ear to an extreme degree, which could be a good thing. It's a good thing if your owner listens to the GM, if the GM knows what he's talking about. But nobody trusts that Trent Baalke actually knows what he's talking about or is a good GM. So I think the Jaguars are a team that I think that Deion would be open to Shador going to the Jaguars, but not with the current GM.
Yeah,
and that's what matters. 3-4 months from now.
Let's not get it twisted either. Like Shador's really good, but nobody's a guarantee. Like I think there's an equal chance that some of these NFL teams at the top of the draft are side-eyeing Shador and Deion much as it's going the other way too. You know what I mean? And here are the teams. This is the top five teams in the draft as of right now. And it's funny you bring up Jacksonville. They would be Jacksonville once again would be picking first in the draft. That would be the third time since 2021 that the Jags would be picking first overall in the NFL draft. That's incredible. Jacksonville, the Giants, the Titans, the Browns, the Raiders. I would argue that all but Jacksonville themselves need a quarterback, right? All of those teams would make sense to draft a quarterback, all of them.
I think of those organizations, the Browns are a tricky one because they've put together such a good roster, but for the huge, massive swing that they took at quarterback, that just they completely fell on their faces. And I think the thing, if I were Deion, I'd be wondering about is, all right, exactly how much is the owner? Is the owner turned into a guy that genuinely listens to his people, or is he still making the big decisions? And exactly why are they whiffing on some of these big, big, big decisions like that?
You know,
that's what I would worry about there.
You know, the other thing I would worry about too, if I were Shadur and Deion, would be that the very reason you draft a quarterback high and hope that he plays well is that now you've got this window where you're not paying a quarterback top dollar money. The fact of the matter is, if you draft Shadur Sanders, he's on a roster where Deshaun Watson still counts $72 million next year, $72 million the year after that, and I think another 30-some-odd million in dead money the year after that. Like, you never really, truly ever get to be a rookie quarterback or a rookie contract quarterback experiencing the roster benefits of being a young quarterback, like CJ is right now, you know?
Yeah, even if Amari Cooper was still on the team, he's still 1 year older and look banged up with injuries like he is right now. He might pull the veto, the parental veto on the Browns.
Yep.
The Giants are the one that I feel I'm conflicted about, because I think from the marketing side of things and everything else that Deion was really good at in his career, there's no better place of those teams you mentioned than New York. And yet with it comes a whole lot of other organizational baggage, not to mention the pressure and the scrutiny of playing quarterback in New York. And yet, look, Eli would be the guy who seemed least equipped to deal with the New York media, and he did just fine.
His obliviousness actually wound up being a good thing, you know? But I think that the question with the Giants would be, okay, is Joe Shane back as the GM? To your point, like GM and head coach, like, okay, is he going to play for Brian Daboll?
Yeah, I think the organization is just fine as long as they have a GM that you feel good about. And is Joe Shane that GM? I don't think Deion would look at the Joe Shane production, and especially if you watch Hard Knocks offseason, I don't think Joe Shane's his guy.
Do you want Shadur in the division? What if Tennessee took Shadur Sanders?
Yeah, I'm here for the anything that brings more drama to the AFC South.
Juice.
I'm here for
here for the juice.
More
man.
Juice, more drama.
Yes.
More Pat McAfee wringing his hands over the new quarterback
in
the division.
Scared.
Yes.
Yep, we ain't scared. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. All right, Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you here on a Thursday. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. J.J. Watt was on the Pat McAfee show, and J.J. can't believe the percent chance the Texans have to make the postseason. J.J. talked about that. The second half issues. J.J. on players-only meetings is must-listen-to radio. We've got that for you coming up next.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
There was J.J. Watt on the Pat McAfee show yesterday talking about the Texans in their their 94% chance of making the postseason.
And some of those 94% aren't actually 94%, you know? That's in a database and an algorithm, not in real life. Like, Texans, 94.4%. Okay, then you got the Colts right there, 26.5%.
Sure.
But do they know that Anthony Richardson's starting this weekend?
I doubt it.
Do these stats know that the Indianapolis Colts are now a professional culture behind closed doors? No, they don't. So it's much more wide open than these numbers say, but yeah, it does look like it is a one slot.
Are you just back on board now? Are you just fully back on board?
Buddy,
like, has this just been a hop back on?
Until they...
Was it the tooth? Was it the tooth? Was that what the problem was? You were angry because your tooth hurt? So you're tough on the Colts, and now the tooth is out, you feel good? You're like, hey, I'm a Colt again.
I didn't think about that possibility.
Okay, so that was it. Was mostly McAfee talking about rambling on about algorithms and whatnot. But the Texans, yeah, like all you go to the, a lot. It's hard to find a site where the Texans have less than a like a 94% or a 90% chance of making the postseason right now.
It's a testament to just how bad the AFC South is this
year. That's the biggest thing. Yes,
right. The Texans have still been operating. The last few weeks where they've lost three or four games, they haven't been that much different than they were when they had a really good record. Just they operate like a 500 football team.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a matter of, all right, at this point, it's hard to envision them getting worse. And I say worse as if they're bad. They've been mediocre. They're a mediocre team in a division loaded with bad teams. So, but they're capable of being better than mediocre. That's what we're waiting for.
94% chance to make the playoffs, 50% chance to get to the second round of the playoffs. And then from there, it gets a lot dicier. 17% chance to make the conference championship game.
That's not astronomical, Sean.
Not astronomical.
That's not bad.
For a team that can't block and protect its quarterback, like that's 17%. It's a good sporting chance right there.
But with the Nico Collins potentially returning, which changes it. They still won't be able to block, but it won't hurt them as much. You're not as hamstrung by a bad offensive line when you've got Nico Collins out there. You can overcome some of those issues a little bit more easily.
I asked you earlier this week, like if the Texans are the four seed, which they would be under these scenarios, they'll get a home playoff game. Which of the team, you know, it looks like it'd be some either the Steelers or the Chargers or the Ravens, one of those teams. And you and I kind of rank those teams. If we take it a step further and assume the Texans win that game and they go on to the next round, they'd probably have to travel to either Kansas City or Baltimore or Buffalo.
Yeah.
Is there a preference with any of those, or are those all just, wow, that's cold, and that is a raucous
in terms of
who you'd want to play, like of those teams.
Oh, in the playoffs.
Yeah, like if you had to go on the road, like last year.
Buffalo.
Buffalo?
Yeah.
That just feels like...
You got a taste of success against Buffalo.
You do. No, it's the right choice. It just feels like, wow, there's really no good choices. I guess this is when you're the four seed, this is the spot you put yourself in.
Except that the way the Texans have been playing right now, that's where I just I reserve the right to change how I feel about them after they go through their stretch of really tough games in the regular season.
Yeah,
that's going to change everything.
Just thinking about the weather is all.
When it comes to Bobby Slowick, I'm just thinking about the composition of the team right now and how they struggle. And so much of it is, man, they love to run two tight end sets with condensed formations where they bring everybody in close to the football. And it just feels like, man, somebody yesterday said, well, Seth, even after Nico comes back, do you trust their ability to protect CJ long enough to utilize some of these deep routes? No, I don't. But I also feel worse about it when they can't pass protect whether they have five guys in protection or eight guys staying in protection. And whenever they bring in a bunch of people to help pass protect so they can maybe have some deep developing routes, I feel like it's like you're in a bunker that's made of defective concrete. And you're like, sir, general, we're in trouble if they decide to shell us because this is defective concrete. And the general says, well, how about we bring more defective concrete? we'll add more defective concrete to the bunker. And then you're like, no, that just makes us a bigger target and less able to deal with it. That's what I feel like when they have the tight ends and the wide receivers all jumbled up near the football. Like, yes, you've brought more ineffective concrete in to protect against the artillery, and we're not ready for that.
Yeah.
So just open it up a little bit, all right? If CJ's going to get hit regardless, at least give everybody a fighting chance.
Give him five options out in routes. Yes. Yes. Players only meeting. Texans reportedly in recent days, they had a players only meeting that, as we've pointed out, it was really more of like leadership council type stuff. Captains plus a few of the other vets. J.J. Watt was asked about this, though, by Pat McAfee. The level of concern that the Texans are at a stage of the season where they're conducting a meeting like this.
Players only meeting. Now, they are sitting on top of the AFC South, but what's your level of concern with that going forward?
Oh, no.
I,
I have heard that there was a long players-only meeting. I am on record in the past discussing players-only meetings and what those generally mean for an organization. When I saw the first half on Sunday, I was very close to tweeting out, maybe it's the first players-only meeting in history that was productive and positive and worked. And then the second half happened. So I'm hoping that something more positive comes out. Maybe it needed to be longer. Maybe they need to double the length of players-only.
Wasn't it they were saying 2 hours?
Multiple hours.
Jeez.
I did hear 2 hours. I have no direct sources, but I did hear two hours.
What the
is an extensive.
Are you doing for 2 hours? Everybody on the team got 10 minutes? All right, everybody in here gets 10 minutes. Kaimi, you're first. Fairbairn, what are your thoughts?
I missed a 58-yarder. It's the first 50-yarder that I've ever missed, seemingly, this year, and we got to be better attention.
Okay, long snapper, Wicks, get up there, pal. What do you got? Okay, CJ, Will, Nico, is it everybody talking? Is there a presentation?
It's a long meeting, man. It's a long meeting. I don't know. That's just a long meeting in general. 2 hours, doesn't matter if it's the head coach running, if it's the players running it. That's a long time to be in that meeting room.
I hope there was a presentation.
Yeah, that is a long time, man. 2 hours.
You know, Oklahoma had a players-only meeting after they lost to Texas a few weeks ago.
Earlier this season?
They followed that up with a 35-9 loss to South Carolina.
Ah, so close.
That was what that players-only meeting yielded for Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I was looking for the various more notable and recent players-only meetings and how well they worked out.
JJ's follow-up on this is hysterical. They asked him, take us in the locker room. How do those meetings go?
There is a lot of, like, there's one guy up there that's like, hey, guys, I'm going to take control of this. We're going to get this under control right away. And there's a lot of people in the room rolling their eyes, laying back in their seats, kind of waiting. And then there's definitely one guy speaking that should not be speaking in front of the team ever.
Every time.
For sure. And he's going to try and rally the troops and really give his go of it, what he's seeing from the sidelines that he thinks the team needs to work on.
Nice.
And that guy's always a f***ing idiot.
Yes. Yep. Always. That is true. Yeah, every team has
And then somebody tries to bring it back around, and they're like, all right, so what we're going to take away from this is that we all need to come in a little earlier. We all need to stay a little later. We all need to really give it a good go this week. As the Jets say, 3 good weeks of practice. We need that, and then we're going to be good. And it just ends, and everybody leaves and immediately starts talking to their close clique of friends like, God, that was f***ing dumb.
Talking about everybody's speech.
Like, can you believe what's his nuts got up there and said, like, he played one snap one time and he thinks he can tell us how to play? Like,
yeah, the big detail they were missing was that it wasn't an entire team entire team only meeting, players only meeting. The team wide players only meeting is rarely productive. It's just too many. It's dominated by all the people that you don't want speaking. The people that called the players-only meeting immediately regret it once they realize, like, oh, God, this guy's been going on for 10 minutes. Who's going to step up and tell him to shut up? Yeah. So it's important to point out that this was not an entire team players-only meeting. It was a few of the leaders that got together who I feel like, could spend 2 hours talking about various things and ideas and maybe the way they can lead some of the guys who, if they had been in the meeting, would have been talking too much. Those are the guys you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I'm less skeptical of this players-only meeting because it wasn't the type of meeting that Pat McAfee and J.J. Watt were talking about.
Okay, as far as J.J.'s description of the meeting, which was fantastic, it was hilarious. He's got to be drawing from some personal experience to be that descriptive about it.
Mm-hmm.
I stand on my hypothesis from 2 hours ago when we played that audio that he is describing a meeting during the 2013 2-14 season, somewhere like midway through the season, where DJ Swearinger stood up and said, "Hey guys, this is what rookie safety DJ Swearinger." Stood up and said, "Hey guys, this is what we need to do." And as you pointed out earlier, it involves some form of swag that we need to operate with more swag.
We need to bring more
two
swag.
G's. Yeah, two
that's
G's.
That's the whole. Yeah, that's the problem.
Yep.
So 2014. I guess the only thing there was DJ was at least playing a bunch. I wonder who the guy would have been that wasn't playing at all in 2014.
Yeah.
They really thought. I don't know. 2013 or 14?
13 was when they went 2-14 season. Yeah. 2013. So The irony in all this, and I don't think I'm, you know, being mean here by saying this, like the irony in all this is I think that most people back when JJ's image was being so perfectly crafted, you know, like when he was at his peak winning those multiple Defensive Player of the Year awards, there was, you know, JJ was not as loose publicly talking about things. He loosened up through the, I think those injuries in 16 and 17 kind of changed his outlook on things. And he became, I thought, a little more authentic. I think a lot of people would have thought, like, during JJ's early years, like, especially 14 and 15, when he was the best player maybe in the league and he was the leader of the team, that he would have been the guy calling the players-only meeting. JJ clearly is making fun of anybody having to do with leading a players-only meeting in that.
Well, if it's if it's the entire group like that.
Yeah.
The one guy that I thought it was maybe Brandon Harris, because that was
no fly zone.
That was in the peak. Like, why is Brandon Harris still on this?
That's
team
a good
stage?
One.
Like, man,
yeah.
We knew that Rick Smith and his uncle were buddies or something, going back to their playing days. It just didn't make a whole lot of sense.
And Brandon Harris, like, he called himself no fly zone. He's from the U, so I could see him like getting up and like making a statement in that meeting, and everybody's like, bro, you played four snaps yesterday. What are we doing?
Yeah,
that's a good one, Seth. Brandon Harris. All right, I choose to speak.
Unless it was
that
Ed, well, that year could have been Ed Reed too. If
in 2013,
people weren't all that enthusiastic about Ed Reed's veteran leadership that he was supposed to provide. it turned out that it was more Ed Reed taking shots at Wade Phillips the whole season.
Yeah. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. 5 Hour Energy fan line 713-572-4610. If you want to hit us in there. Who do you think JJ was referring to? Who is the jackass that doesn't play that was speaking up in old Texans team-only meetings when JJ was there? Weigh in. Nick Caserio was on Texans All Access yesterday. I don't know if it's running tonight or ran last night. It was on YouTube. I know that. We've got the audio to prove it. He sat down with the guys. His scouting report on Micah Parsons paints a pretty scary picture. And what does Nick Caserio have to say about the Texans offense in the second half of football games? We'll hear from the Texans GM coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast, Nick Caserio, Texans GM. He was on with the guys on Texans All Access, Mark Vandermeer and John Harris. Best thing the Cowboys have going for them this weekend, or on Monday, I should say, against the Texans, is probably Micah Parsons. Here's Nick Caserio with his scouting report on the Cowboys' defensive standout.
No, it's problematic. So, because he's not really in the same spot. So he's kind of transitioned from playing off the ball to being a on the line of scrimmage player. I mean, he's as good of a defensive end or outside linebacker or rush player as in the league. But when you go back to Penn State, to your point, he was off the ball.
Yeah.
But he's just very unique. The way he's athletic, leverage, strength, power, quickness, speed, and he just presents a lot of problems. So you have to have an awareness of where he is. Understanding he's probably not going to be in the same spot, but just you got to make sure you take care of him.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to be a long day. I mean, anybody that has, what did he have, over 100 pressures last year or something ridiculous. So you just better make sure you know where he is.
Yeah.
This is one area where the Texans can feel good about with Laremy Tunsil, that Laremy Tunsil has handled Micah Parsons pretty well when he's been tasked with blocking him in the past. And it's a perfect matchup for Laremy Tunsil because it's athleticism versus athleticism. And Laremy is up there with the elite athletes as offensive tackles. So he's not, you know, he's not the complete and total package. We know that. There's no blue-collar Trent Williams-style physicality to his play. But he's done pretty well against Micah Parsons. So Micah Parsons on the other side of the ball versus Titus Howard, or when he slants down inside on games, that's where I worry about him. He's still very capable of ruining your day. But the classic matchup of left tackle versus Micah Parsons, that part of it at least, I feel pretty good about.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wouldn't put him over there if I was the Cowboys.
You're moving him around all over the place.
Yeah,
a movable chess piece.
And plenty of kill spots on that Texans O-line. And Parsons had been injured. He'd had a high ankle sprain he suffered earlier in the season, but he came back last week against the Eagles, and he had two sacks in that game. So he's kind of picking up right where he left off before he sprained the ankle. I mean, he's the one guy. You know, the Cowboys are the team in this game that's going to need turnovers and short fields and, you know, something to happen on special teams probably. Micah Parsons is a guy who, that if you're careless, he can get you a short field or two if he gets at CJ. And, you know, there have been, you know, CJ's had minor ball security issues. He had a fumble a couple weeks ago. Now, the last one, the fumble he had in the game against the Lions, fortunately didn't result in a turnover. That was his own right tackle stripping it away from him. I would hope that they've coached Titus this week to, you know, not strip his own quarterback, because they've got enough issues with Micah Parsons probably trying to strip CJ Stroud in this game. So, I would hope that they've got that buttoned up.
I think the biggest hope is, man, if they can handle Micah Parsons and have a plan for him, that you could really just throw a hand grenade in the middle of their organization and get Micah Parsons to really genuinely lay into either Mike McCarthy. Not a little bit of a drive-by that he can talk his way out of, but just absolutely after this game, throw a hand grenade into the organization with Micah Parsons and various other team stars just talking about how poorly run everything is.
Well, the Micah and CJ dynamic still exists in this game. You know, it's not what it would have been had the Cowboys held up their end of the bargain and be leading their division like the Texans are. But I would imagine Micah Parsons is looking to bury CJ's ass into the dirt a few times in this.
Yeah, he spoke to that on his podcast about how, hey, they've been talking smack to each other for a long time, and this is big for him personally. I was trying to put myself in the shoes of a Cowboys fan listening to him talk about that, and I thought, wow, I just really wish this was more about him feeling like, he just really wants to go out and win a football game or something.
Yeah.
But that this game is important to him. Why is it important? Because of the intrastate rivalry? No, because CJ and I have talked a lot of smack against each other.
Have you noticed?
Is it big because CJ's like a notable quarterback and you want to kill him? Like, no, you guys have had a bunch of playful jabbing at each other.
Right. Have you not watched? We've been with each other on several different platforms. Jabbing at each other, you know?
Is Micah saying, like, oh, we just can't lose this game. We got to win it. We got to get back to where we can be. No, he's saying, look, I'm going to have CJ on this podcast in the offseason, and I don't want it to be uncomfortable for me.
That's right.
Because they won, yeah.
That's right. And CJ needs to win this game, so that's one more podcast he can go on and feel superior to whoever he's talking to, you know?
I don't think we're going to get nearly the frequency of podcast appearances out of CJ this offseason.
I don't think so either, yeah.
I think he might be zero dark 30 all offseason long.
That might not be bad. You know, we'll see how the rest of the season goes. But
stay away from celebrity parties in general, by the way, from now on. Just have a blanket. Whatever the P. Diddy parties ended up being, stay the hell away from anything that might eventually develop into something.
Eventually,
like that
future. You never know. Like the clock is always ticking. You know.
Yeah.
Here was Nick.
If you find yourself at a place where you're like, I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, but if I were, I feel like this is half Illuminati here. Get the hell out. Just run.
Get out.
Have one of you. He needs somebody in his crew that's like an Illuminati, like a hardcore
like
Illuminati.
Like a radar almost.
A theorist. Yeah. And like whenever that guy says, just take it. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. I'm going to stay away from whatever you think is going on there.
It's a good person to add to his crew. Nick Caserio talking about, this is Nick Caserio on Texans All Access, asked about the Texans offensive issues right now.
It's just going to be about just each play is going to take on, you know, significance in the course of a game, and just trying to string together positive plays. We just got to eliminate some of the negative plays. John and I talked about this before the game, kind of the first down production. You know, when it was good, it was good. And when it was behind the sticks, we ended up in some longer yardage situations. So we always want to try to stay ahead and say, even look at Detroit, it's kind of going back to the defense as well. Like, we had some production on first down. It kind of put them in some less advantageous situations for their offense. So it's just going to be about just consistent performance, trying to have positive plays, trying to have good production on first down, eliminate the negative plays, and then the turnovers, you know, you want to try to eliminate those. I mean, if you don't do anything, the percentage is usually pretty good. If you have no turnovers and you take care of the football, usually correlates to winning. So things are fixable, so we just got to try to make the improvements here as we go.
Dude, you know what really correlates to winning? Winning the turnover battle by three. That really correlates to winning.
Yeah.
They've managed to lose two games in the last month where they were plus three in turnovers. If you when you're plus three in turnovers, you win games. Depending on what your benchmark is for since this year, or since this century, or whatever, they're all well over 90%. It's like 92 or 93%.
If you're plus five in the turnover ratio in one half, You'd like to think that leads to more than 23 points.
You would,
that's
yeah.
That's one thing. Now, and I would say, realistically, let's say plus four in the turnover ratio in the first half, because the play at the end of the half
A couple of their interceptions were in the second half. The Kalen Bullock and Kamari Lassiter's interception. Yeah.
So plus five there. If the you took the ball away five times in the course of the game. Yes. That's a good little detail you picked up on there, Sean. I forgot about the two third quarter interceptions. But you turn the ball over five times as a defense. You're going to win that game. You're 100% going to win that game. And the Texans, with the talent that they have, they should have scored 45 points based off of those five turnovers.
They scored 23 in the first half. Okay, so here's a text to the 5 Hour Energy fan line for you. Someone says, Seth, do you think there's a chance that the Texans can play the same way they were playing against the Lions in the first half, but consistently? Because that was a team I was expecting to see the whole season. Even the O-line play was a little bit better in the first half.
A little bit better, but they could not run the ball at all.
Couldn't run.
I think they were settling for field goals. I don't know that the way the offense performed in the first half wasn't good enough. No. I didn't really think, again, when you're yielded opportunities like that and you only come out of it with field goals, that's not how I need to see them play. The competitiveness in that game, the fact that the Texans were that game, was very much about the defense creating turnovers. More so than anything else.
Yeah, it was. I remember I was sitting next to you in the press box, and early in the game, you know, when CJ converted a 3rd and 10 and a 3rd and 16 because they couldn't get out of first gear in the running game. And I turn to you and I'm like, okay, well, it doesn't look like we're going to get all the nice things for Christmas. So if we have a choice between the version of the Texans that Joe Mixon goes for 100 yards every week, but they completely suck on offense, or they can't run the ball, but CJ puts on a cape on every 3rd and long and converts, I'll take that one. If I have to pick one, because that's what it was last season. Like, they couldn't run the football, but CJ Stroud was incredible. I'm like, I guess I'll take this one. I don't know that it's good enough to get out of the divisional round, but it might be good enough to beat the Lions tonight. It turns out it wasn't.
And maybe if more of these screens on 2nd and 10 or these runs on 2nd and 10 somehow start bursting when everybody knows that, okay, like, this is where Bobby just follows the old script of, oh, unsuccessful play on 1st down. Better run it, whether it's 2nd and 10 or what have you. Got to have a little success.
Ugh.
Oh, we got stuffed on that run play. Okay.
Dude, it's infuriating, man. It's infuriating. John Lopez, Reggie Atatula, they are in the house. They are in the loop. What's going on, fellas?
Yo.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing pretty good, bro.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You're good? I anointed the Texans AFC South champions at 6 a.m. this morning. They clinched the division yesterday as the Colts went back to Anthony Richardson.
They did.
Got a lot of heat for that.
Yeah, Sean, I did. I got a lot of people saying that, hey, be careful. You know, if the Anthony Richardson goes on a heater now, it's your fault.
Yeah, I look forward to you single-handedly reviving his...
I've got that kind of power.
That's right.
Yeah.
I've often said that. Got
that kind of power. Do you think they're doing this because they're actually trying to win, or is this a development? Like, Joe Flacco was terrible for a couple of games.
Yeah, that feels like... I don't think that you really have it in you regardless.
Yeah.
But yeah, it feels like if Joe Flacco is going to play the way that he did, there's no upside on that.
Right.
Right. At the very least, with Anthony Richardson playing the way that he has during the course of this season, mistakes and all, at least there is an upside as to we are getting him more football under his belt for the possibility and the prospect that all of that raw talent is unlocked. Joe Flacco, you just run an old dude.
Take some lumps. Yeah.
If I'm going to lose, I might as well find out about the young quarterback.
Yeah.
That's as simple
as young quarterback who is, in his return, the head coach that's deciding to make him the quarterback for the rest of the season, as opposed to Joe Flacco for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Use the same term. That one of the things that he learned in these last 2 weeks was how to pay attention to details, in everything. Like, everything. It just wasn't good enough.
I was low-key happy.
Yeah.
Literally a quote.
Yeah. Yeah, he did say that.
I was low-key happy.
Yeah, he did say that. I heard you guys yesterday talking about the Astrodome, John.
Oh, you sure did.
Yeah.
you sure did.
Did I just eliminate Reggie from the rest of the...
It's
Sometimes you got to clear out and let a dude operate.
No,
you
know I know.
Mean? Clear the side of the floor.
I thought my comparison I made, Seth and I were talking about it earlier, that the meeting they had yesterday, and then they quoted the CEO of the rodeo had quotes in there. I'm like, these quotes sound like somebody who's trying to get a Jehovah's Witness off of their front seat.
No, they are grifters. They are. They're the con artists.
The conservancy
is grifters. They're con artists.
They looked very well dressed in the video.
They're well dressed grifters. Yeah. Most grifters are.
Yeah.
They're well organized.
Oh, really? Most grifters are.
Well, that's how. Yeah, you don't show up. You don't show up looking like you really need the money. Yes. When you're asking for money.
Exactly.
You,
fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Let me put it very succinctly because as this is something that is very frustrating to me that people continue to fall for this. I actually did a little more work last night and talked to some people at the county.
Okay.
And somewhere else.
Okay.
No way in hell are they going to ever get the support from the county, the Texans, or the rodeo.
Yeah.
So how are you going to do this?
Rogue.
How are you going to
show
this
up at night like graffiti? Like all of a sudden it pops up. Like how did this
get
here?
And that's what I've said, John, is that it seems like the simplest thing is, okay, if it's a plan that makes sense, it's a plan that's going to make money for everybody because everybody's always into that. Yeah. You know, like it's a, the bottom line is like, hey, if you bring us a plan where there's a really good return on investment here, then that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think all roads over and over again lead to, revamping this half century old building into something new and different just doesn't make financial sense.
With
so
no support
in for
of the
it.
Most important three entities there.
Right.
Zero.
Yeah. Right.
But there's going to be 450,000 square feet of revenue generating space.
That's like, what I've been told. Yeah.
Revenue generating somehow. I don't know what generates the revenue.
I got this plan, Sean and Seth. Are you in? No. I'm still going with
it.
I'm
going with it. Yeah.
I'm still going with it.
No, it's like, hey, man, like the Texans and the rodeo in the county, they're the HOA.
Yeah.
They're not letting you build this thing in your front yard over here. Okay?
It's like, you know what it is? It's like somebody showing up at your doorstep, like selling a perpetual motion machine. Like, hey, look at this beautiful mock-up of this perpetual motion machine. Wouldn't it be awesome to spend $1 billion on?
$1 billion.
Like, well, I gotta know. I need to know that this is worth purchasing.
Go ahead.
I've gotten the feel that you enjoy The Simpsons. I constantly am thinking monorail. You know what I mean?
Yeah, monorail.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We need a song for it like they had for the monorail. We need Conservancy.
No. Reginald, you know what, though? Because I'm old enough to remember the World's Fairs where, like, that was one of the things that they would use to sell
monorail.
A city on being that we're going to have a monorail.
That's right.
It'll be used like it'll be futuristic, just like the Jetsons. People will use it to get to work and everything.
Unbelievable. All right. Payne and Pendergast. Seth, football Friday tomorrow. I'll see you at 6 a.m. Antibodies to you, my friend.
Yeah. Antibodies and football Fridays to you.
Thank you. We'll be ready to go, man. Football Friday before
I've got
Monday
all this
night.
Dip.
Yeah.
Daisy's giving me all this dip. I
have it ready, man.
I'm going to be,
scooping it out with our hands. Yes.
I will not be depleted.
We're slathering ourselves in dip. Yes. We're on it.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.